I figured I'd just have a bit of a yap. A whole lot of stuff kicked off for me in 2017 when I won the FMG Young Farmer of the Year. And since then, I'm involved in a whole lot of stuff. And I sort of thought I'd just have a bit of a yarn about all the things I've been involved with and how sort of my view of the world has changed a wee bit over that time, and try and wrap it up a wee bit at the end. I'm going to wing it a wee bit, but I've got a few slides here to demonstrate some of what I'm talking about. So, this mouse will work. Hey. So, yeah, Rachel touched on it. My wife Leanne and I farm 3,500 stock units on about 320 effective hectares in south Otago, just between Milton and Balclutha. We leased it off my parents. We came home from Canterbury in 2015, bought the stock and plant, and got stuck into it. Got a couple of wee kids. Sienna's, she turns 3 next month, and Finn turns 1 next month. So, yep, fun times with kids, and it's actually good at the moment. I'll talk about it a wee bit later on, but spending a bit more time at home at the moment instead of away all the time, so it's good spending time with the kids. So I'll talk at the start about my Young Farmer of the Year experience, and specifically the AgMart Market Innovation Project that was part of my Young Farmer of the Year Grand Final as part of... is that the pointer? I can't bloody see it. As part of winning Young Farmer of the Year, I won a wee travel scholarship. So I went to America with Silverfern Farms on their in-market tour in 2018, and you had an awesome time over there, a couple of weeks with a group of farmers and some of the board and some of the management and stuff as well. One of my prizes was entry into the Calibre Leadership Program, so I'll talk a wee bit about my project and what I learned around that. And also I spent 2 years sitting on Damien O'Connor's Primary Sector Council, helping put together the Fit for a Better World vision for him. And then I'll try and wrap it up at the end with my web map over there of my world view and how I see New Zealand working out. So a big part of Grand Final, or FMG Young Farmer of the Year Grand Final, was the AgMart Market Innovation Project. And my crazy idea was all about how can we get lambs from a wee egg on the left up to a lamb, but get the ewe out of the middle, no sheep in the middle. And it all started, it was actually a mate of mine had seen some cool stuff on the internet and sort of alerted me to some developments by in America by a guy called, by a group of researchers led by a guy Partridge, developing this thing called a biobag. So what they'd done was take lambs, surgically remove them from the ewe at about 100 to 110 days of gestation, so about 2/3 of the way through gestation, put them in this basically oversized Ziploc bag, and get them right through to 150 days full gestation with no noticeable developmental or physiological differences. Right, so they had genetically identical lambs that were gestated naturally in a ewe right the way through. Then they had a whole lot of bag lambs and a whole lot of naturally born lambs, and took them right through to a year old, and there was no difference between them. Now, the whole point of doing this is for human research, right? So basically anything involving reproduction in humans has been developed in sheep. Everything. Don't ask me why, but there's a lot of similarities between an in utero lamb and an in utero baby. And Liggins, which I've got written up here, he's a classic, quite close to home. Professor Liggins and his mates, their development of steroid use in the final 24-hour of gestation in a baby, which is going to be, they know is going to be born early, so somewhere between 28 and 32 weeks, has taken survival of those babies from somewhere around 10% to well north of 90%. And that was developed in Auckland University, in sheep. So, you know, a friend of mine, his wife, went into hospital, went into labour at 28 weeks last year. They've got a happy, healthy baby because of steroid use. That she spent 24 hours on steroids, baby's sweet. In the 1980s, there's a 90-something percent chance that baby would have died. So that's just an example of some of the cool stuff that's been developed in sheep for use in human health. So what I sort of thought was, for the first sort of 30 days of a gestation, so after fertilisation, the egg floats around in the sheep's uterus before it implants in the uterine wall. So there's sort of 30 days at the start that we don't have to worry too much about, sort of 50 or 60 days at the end of gestation that we don't have to worry too much about because we've got this technology here that's being developed for humans. If we can sort of patch the middle 80 days, it's a bit more complicated than just patching in the middle, but if we can do something, develop some cool technology to patch up that time frame in the middle, then we can start getting lambs without even having to worry about ewes, eh? So pretty sweet. And this is the conclusion slide from my presentation. Now, I'm just putting it up there because I'll sort of loop back and reference it at the end. But my conclusion was, we can piggy bank on some developments that will be, they're going to happen for the human field. I made some assumptions and figured if we have sort of 100 and something million up front, then we could probably get something like this over the line. There's big benefits, manageable risks. It'll complement our clean green image and compete with synthetic foods, and we should consider it. And this was me in 2017 going, we should get in behind this. And I presented to a panel of judges at Grand Final One, which was Jack Monroeth, and they had a whole lot of questions. I can't remember them now, but it was pretty cool, and I sort of felt like I was on the leading edge of some pretty cool stuff. So that was sort of where I was going in 2017. I'm like, yeah, this, some cool technology is going to take over the world. I still think something like that will come, right? But it's just a matter of time. But do we want to be involved? We'll have that discussion soon. So, like I said before, one of my prizes from winning Grand Final was entry into Kellogg Rural Leadership Program. And part of Kellogg, I'd see a couple of familiar faces in the room who have done the Kellogg, or just in the process of completing it. Part of your Kellogg Rural Leadership course, you do a project, and that can be on anything that you feel like it, that you feel passionate about, to sort of show some critical thinking on your way through. And part of my Kellogg, I got to meet a lady called Angela Clifford, who's the CEO of Eat New Zealand, and she told me this crazy story about a Chinese business couple who had eaten some New Zealand crayfish in China. They came to New Zealand for some business and thought, we want to eat New Zealand crayfish in New Zealand in the home of crayfish. So where do you go? Kaikoura. I mean, the name is Feed of Craze, pretty much. So they went to Kaikoura, rolled up to a restaurant and said, we want a feed of crayfish that comes from right there over that seawall. And the waitress sort of said, oh yeah, we've got crayfish on the menu. And they said, no, we want to know that seafood came from right there. And the waitress said, well, it's seafood, it's probably come from here, but we don't really know. Turns out crayfish, most of the crayfish in New Zealand goes to Christchurch, gets graded, anything export gets exported, and anything that's not export grade gets shipped around the restaurants in New Zealand. So what did they do? They got a charter boat the next day, went out off the beach there, got, if anyone's been on a charter boat off Kaikoura, you get a craypot or two on the way home, get a feed of crays. They went back to their motel with their feed of crays and cooked it in the jug. Now, anybody stand up and tell me that a powerful Chinese business couple come to the world home of crayfish and have to cook, if they want it fresh, they have to cook it in a frickin' jug. We've got a cocked up system in New Zealand if that's the case. So that sort of got me thinking. We have this world where we all know that our customers' expectations of what we produce are changing. And the relationship with that customer and who's producing that food is changing. We all know that, but how do we answer that question, right? And I sort of had this idea, why can't we sort of shorten the chain, just shorten that whole supply chain right up to producer, consumer, nothing in the middle. No export stuff, no supermarkets, no nothing, just shorten it right up. So I started to see some stuff going on. I mean, everyone know gravity fishing. Nate Smith down at Bluff, who was on Country Calendar a couple of years ago, absolute legend. We went to Stuart Island with him last year. He's such a good bastard. Anyway, like this is him on Instagram. I don't know if you guys can see it from back there, but he's saying, here you go, Joshy B, whatever that. The top two horses are yours, bro, and then some cool emojis. And those two big fish on top are going to this Joshy B chef somewhere up in Auckland. So, I mean, this chef in Auckland has seen the fish he's going to get in the mail tomorrow when they're half an hour out of the water. So you can see some relationships are really starting to change already between producer, or in this case, fisherman, and customer, which in that case is the chef. So I sort of thought, you know, why can't we have a platform, some sort of platform where the producers and the consumers are linked, just they make their own decision on their own relationship, right? You're not beholden to supermarkets and margins and this and that. So there's a couple of cool examples in Europe. This one example called Rico, which is based somewhere in Europe, and it's basically a Facebook page that each little town has their own Facebook page run by a volunteer. And if I've got some lamb to sell, well, I just put it on there and like, hey, I've got a couple of lambs to sell, who wants them? And people who want them comment or get a hold of me, and we'd make the transaction ourselves, and each little town's got its own little platform running like that. So that was sort of, it showed me that, like I say, the world's changing, the way people relate to where their food comes from is changing, and we can change some stuff in New Zealand. Like I did a survey, and you know, it was well over 90% of people got their food from supermarkets, right? But well under 10% of people got their food directly from the food producer, which is probably fair enough. But the next question I asked was, if you had the opportunity to buy direct off the producer, would you? And of course, it completely flipped around the other way. Well over 90% of people said yes. So the demand's there. People want to, but it's just you don't have the ability. You know, supermarkets are pretty quick and easy. So another part of my prize from Grand Final was a travel scholarship that was to be used for personal development. And I'm a Silver Fern Farms supplier shareholder, and yeah, own some shares. So I went to use that scholarship to go to America with Silver Fern Farms on their in-market tour in 2018. And America's crazy. I'm sure a fair lump of you have been there. Blew my mind. And these photos haven't come out that well, but saw some cool stuff, got to meet some amazing people and do some cool things. And it sort of really made me think about how we operate in New Zealand, how we're seen, and just where we're going to go in the future, I suppose. You know, that the photo up in the middle of the chickens on the billboard, that was like here to the back of the room from McDonald's head office in Chicago. We went to McDonald's global head office in Chicago, which would the building had only been opened a couple of weeks. They basically bulldozed what was Oprah's studios and built this bloody great big building, and that's their head office. And there were people, like heaps of people, protesting McDonald's outside, spray painting all over the sidewalk and big billboards. And it really opened my eyes to actually how easy information is to get across and how passionate some people are about doing what they believe is right. This second photo from the right, you can't really see it, is in Times Square at about midnight one night. Matua Wines, I think they're Martinborough Wines, advertising. You know, everyone knows the big billboards on the side of the buildings in Times Square. That's New Zealand wine flashing all over billboards on the side of Times Square. It was pretty sweet to see, actually. It was there for about 3 seconds and disappeared. That's why my photo's a bit scratchy. But and also, a lot of, you know, we spend a lot of time in like farmers markets and things over there, and butcheries and things, and you sort of see some of the claims that are being made by smaller scale American producers. You know our farms, you deserve transparency. These are the claims that are being made in America by American producers, and that's what we've got to compete against, which is kind of funny because some of the stuff we heard about 100% grass-fed in New York State, you know, 100% pasture-raised in New York State, the place freezes solid for 4 months of the year. And I can't get my head around it. And on the left down here, second from the bottom, this was actually aquaculture. It says, trusted farms, aquaculture is good for you and the planet. And they've got a list of the farms that the seafood in that seafood market came from. So this is where the world's heading. The top left there is 100% grass-fed Angus beef. That's Silver Fern Farms Angus beef and Sickles Market on the outskirts of New York, and a real high-flying hoity-toity area of New York. And there was this big chiller full of Silver Fern Farms Angus beef, and it was flying out the gate. That was pretty cool to see, actually. And there's a whole lot of us standing around with Silver Fern Farms on our on our t-shirts, and one lady came up to us and grabbed some stuff and looked at it and looked at the Silver Ferns logo and looked at our logos and was like, what's going on here? And we all started talking with our Kiwi accents, and she thought it was great that, you know, and we were like, well, one of us could have produced that. And she, it just blew her mind. And it was Memorial Weekend, which in America, if it's Memorial Weekend, all you do is cook burgers and drink beer. So there was just like housewife after housewife coming in and buying Angus mince from New Zealand for their burgers at about three times the price per pound than just the cheap stuff down the way. And there was people flat out, man, they must have sold some mince. Anyway, in the middle there, anyone know who that guy is? Surely. Nelson Hancock's. So Nelson and Fee were on the trip with us. He's holding up a New Zealand lamb rack that weighs exactly a pound and was $14 or $16. This big red lump of meat with the white sticker on it is $60 American dollars, but it's 22 pounds. It was $2, I've got it written here, $2.50 or $2.60 a pound. So the lamb rack's $15 or $18 a pound. That beef, it's called a boneless beef top round, which is basically just a big lump of ugly beef, for $60, so it's $2 something a pound. And then along the bottom there is a boned out lamb leg, and that was $22 a pound. So we're already operating at a different level compared to all the crap that gets produced in America in bulk. You know, and you look at the packaging on that, on the lamb leg, and even on the rack that Nelson's holding up, compared to this bloody great big lump of beef with a little sticker on it, and that little sticker says something along the lines of could contain nasty bacteria, can make sure it's fully cooked and all this and all that. Whereas our New Zealand product that talks about its provenance and it's grass fed and it's antibiotic free and it's this and it's that. So yeah, we're doing not a bad job over here, but you can see what we're up against. And also, can anyone tell me what this wee burger is in the bottom right here? Nailed it. So we went to Beer Burger just because we had to, and sampled an Impossible Burger. I can't remember if that one was Impossible Beyond, but both of them plant-based. If you actually bite the whole burger and eat it as a burger, it's pretty hard to tell. But once you actually eat the burger patty on its own, it's pretty funny. Like, just didn't really taste that nice. And also, I can't remember where this was. It might have been New York. It's this thing called a farmer's fridge. And it's basically a vending machine with, like, probably the best looking salads I reckon I've ever seen in my life. I hate eating vending machine food, but I would have eaten one of them. They look real good. There's actually one in there with a boiled egg cut in half, which sounds dodgy, but shit, it looks good. So, you know, these are the things that are going on the other side of the world, and these are the things we've got to keep in the back of our mind for what we're producing in New Zealand and how we want the world to see us, because the world's changing. You've got Beer Burger over there who's got some amazing, you know, we had some of their like actual genuine burgers that were amazing, but also directly underneath on their menu, underneath, you know, all their fancy schmancy burgers is Impossible Burger and Beyond Burger, which are made out of, I don't even know what, out of a factory. So I got a phone call. I can still remember exactly where I was on the farm when I got a phone call from some random lady at NPI in Wellington saying, oh, wondering, you know, Damien's wanting to put this thing called a primary sector council together, wondering if you want to be involved. And the next 2 years were a whirlwind. It was meant to be four meetings a year. I was meant to be involved for the first 12 months, and then someone else was going to take over. Well, we had four meetings in 4 months, and then it went to two meetings a month. And I was involved for two whole years. I got to my end of my 12-month thing, and they said, oh, we want you to be involved. Yeah, continue to be involved. I said, well, you're going to have to... Yeah, you know, like for that first 12 months, I was just there to learn. I wasn't getting any meeting fees, and it was actually quite hard to manage at home. I was just trying to get my farm established and whatnot. Anyone else in the room was getting their meeting fees. I said, well, you're going to have to help me out here. I'm only bloody 28, and I'm trying to get my farm established, and you want me to spend half the month away in frickin' Wellington? So after that, I was made a full member. I got my meeting fees. I was able to pay casual staff, and it was a bit easier after that. But it was just sitting around the room with some of those unbelievable people, you know, real leaders in New Zealand's agriculture sector. It blew my mind. So, our role was to articulate a vision for New Zealand's agriculture sector and provide some strategic advice to the minister for how government can enable that. Oh, she's standing. Better hurry up. Like consumers, we've got so much increasing scrutiny on everything that we're doing. How can we, as New Zealand agricultural producers, food and fibre producers, come together and say this is what we're doing as a team? A big part of that was what we learned about this Māori concept or Māori thing called taia, which is everything in the living world around us, right? It's not, instead of putting ourselves in the middle and everything revolves around us as humans, everything's in a big circle, right? So you've got the biological life, the climate, the land and the water, and it's all in a big circle, and if one of those little notches isn't in a good place, then the whole lot all starts to fall down. You know, taia ora, tangata ora. If the natural world is healthy, then so too are the people. I went into PSC saying it's all about the people, it's all about the people, it's all about the people. If we lose the people, we're buggered. And I came out of PSC saying taia ora, tangata ora. If the natural world is healthy, we too as people will be healthy. Well, we too as people will be healthy. So it's a slight mindset change, and I think for me, it's actually made life a bit clearer about why we do what we want to do. And you know, there's been a lot of talk about environmental stuff here today, but you know, if you've got a clear picture in your mind, it makes life a whole lot easier. So, try to wrap it up, and it's always hard to wrap up when you've got someone there looking at you saying, "Hurry up!" But I've been involved in some awesome stuff, right, and just some stuff that's just absolutely blown my mind. And one of the things that has actually become very clear in my mind always that I've come to realise is if we're going to navigate all this crazy stuff that's coming at us, and I'm not arguing with any of it, at a high level I agree with most of it, the detail I disagree with, but that's a discussion for another day. The way I find myself getting through it, and way my little piece of advice or my one thing to take away, I think, is if we're going to navigate our way through these changing times, is what's crucial in our own minds is to have a clear picture of how we want to see ourselves and our operations, and how we want our consumers and customers, whether it's just down the road in Invercargill, whether it's in Auckland, whether it's in Shanghai, New York or London, how we want the people who are consuming our products to see us and see our and see our production systems, and how they see that little lamb rack or that bone lamb leg or whatever it is sitting on the shelf. If they're going to look at that and see what you see in America, like if you see that big lump of beef that I had a photo of before, and your mind just goes to feedlots and bulk production systems, right? If you see a package of a beautiful bone leg roast or a lamb rack, what do you want that consumer, what do you want their mind to go to? And let that guide the decisions we make day to day, because we can be guided by the regulation and the this and the that, but if you're guided by regulation, you're doing it wrong. You know, guided by rules, it's bullshit. We need to be guided by what's in our heart and what we truly believe is right, and what we really truly believe we want people on the other side of the world and people who are buying what we produce to see. And then all this tough stuff coming at us will just work itself out, because we're farmers. I mean, the reason we're all sitting in here is that we're passionate about change and positive change, right? So I literally Googled Southland rural picture, and this popped up, and it's pretty cool, you know, like got the wee waterway down the side that's fenced off with some bush and a bit of trees here and a bit of grass and some arable ground and some nice blue sky. Like, it's always like this in Southland, eh? So this is what's in my mind, and this is what I'm aiming for. I'm pretty sure everyone in the room will be aiming for something like that too. So just get stuck in and keep fighting the good fight, because it's definitely worth it out there, eh? Cheers.